Today's Shi'as Masechta Ma'akot and Davav, we will begin on Davav and Aleph at the fourth line. We had learned in our previous Shi'ar that the Gemara, the Braisa had taught us that if somebody finds a field in Eretz Yisrael with a marker and he doesn't know what the status of that field is, Yudayim Atshei Shem Zaken or Talmud, you have to have a Zaken or a Talmud Chacham who has to report to you what happened. What is the status of this field? Because, he explained, fish and a kol became a dover. We can't rely on anyone else to certainly be able to tell us what is the status of the field. Amar Abaya, says Abaya, from this halacha we learn, Shmami no. Furban bonadik la masa, if there's in a town, a talmud chacham, kol mila de masa olai ramya. All of the statuses and everything that's going on is his responsibility. And as the Miri explains, if there's a Talmud Chacham in the city, he's the most distinguished Talmud Chacham in the city, he has the responsibility to ascertain what is going on in the city. And the Shaul Shetshuvos Rebbe Chaim, however, says that this responsibility is not just the responsibility that one is appointed to, but even if a person is a person of stature and a person of responsibility, he has to take the responsibility upon himself, even if he was not asked to take on that responsibility. It's something he should be doing on his own. Continues the Gemara. I'm going to read the Matzah Tzuyen Evan Mitzuyenis. If somebody found a stone with plaster on it, which, as we've been learning, is an indication that there is a kever over there, the area under it is tamei. And there are many different approaches how to look at this Gemara. And we're going to learn the Gemara with the approach that Rashi teaches us. Rashi says that we learned in the previous shurim that the markers were typically not directly on top of the place of tumah, but rather the markers were somewhat removed from the tumah. And the reason we learned was because Chazal did not want that the person should reach the place where is the tumah. Because once he reaches that place and he comes in contact with the tumah, he's already tumah and it's too late. And that's why Chazal said the marker should be put somewhat a little further away from the tumah. But explains Rashi, if it's a situation where the marker is elevated, so since the marker is elevated, that will create that before the person approaches that place, he realizes that that place has tum over there, and therefore it could be directly on the top of the place of the tumah. Continues Rabbi Yehuda. Shtayim. If you have two stones that are next to each other, and both stones have sid on them, im yesh sid beineihem, if there is cement between the two stones, they name tamei. Then that's a proof that not only is the area under the stones tamei, but the area between the stones is tamei as well. Im ain't sid beineihem, but if there is no plaster over there, that's an indication that beineihem tar, that the area between the two stones is tar. Ask the Gemara, the Afrika of the Lekha Chayrish, even if there is no plowed up earth between the two stones, we're still going to say that the area between the two stones is tar. But ask the Gemara, Vatanya, have we not learned in a Braisa? Matzah Evanachas Mitzuyanis, if you find one stone, Tachte Tomei, the area under is Tomei. Shtayim, if you have two stones, Im Yesh Chayrish Beinayim, if there's an area plowed between the two stones, Beinayim Tar, the area between them is tar. Because the fact that that area is plowed is clearly indication that there's no one buried there. Vimlav, but if it's not plowed up, then we say beinayim tamei, that the area between the two stones is tamei, even though there is no plaster there, because we could assume that the person who was making these markers did not bother making a marker between the two stones, because he said, and figured, the fact that you have the two stones marked is clearly an indication to anyone coming there to know that the area in between is tamei. So we see that if an area is not plowed between two stones, it's tamei. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda said that if there is no plaster between the two stones, it's always tar, even if it's not plowed up. So how do we reconcile these two brises? Answers the Gemara Amar Papa, Hacha, this case that we spoke about now, that if the area between the two stones is not plowed, it's an indication that that area is tamei, is kishasid shofach al rishayim, when the cement is, the plaster is on top of the stones, medud al kan, and it's not just on the top, but it's on the sides as well. And therefore, if there's a plowed up area between the two stones, that's clearly an indication that b'neim tar, that the area is between them tar. Deima, because we could assume machmas chayrishu, because of the plowing, that's what caused the iklif, that some of the cement should come down to the area between the two stones. Ivloi, but if it's not plowed up, and the cement going down to this area, then sid the beni, the fact that there's plaster between the two stones is clearly an indication that whoever marked that area wanted to notify us that there's a tumma there, and therefore it's tumma. Rabbi Yehuda, who discussed a place where there's no plaster between the two stones, is speaking about a situation where there's no plaster at all. And therefore, if there is no plaster at all, that's clearly an indication that the area in between is tahar. So in other words, we have three categories. If there's absolutely nothing between the two stones, that's an indication that the area between the two stones is tahar. If there's some plaster going down between the two stones, so it depends. If the area is plowed, so we say that the plowing is what caused the plaster to come down, and therefore the area in between is really tar. But if there is no plowing, so why would there be plaster coming down? The fact that we see plaster coming down is to show us that whoever put up the plaster wanted to let us know that the area in between is tamei. Amar Papa, Amar Asi. And Gemara now quotes another halacha regarding marked fields, how to determine where is the tumah. And therefore says Rav Asi, Meitzar Achad Metsuyan, if there's one side, one border of the field that is marked, hu tamei, that's an indication that the area under that marker is tamei, because of the kula tar. But the whole field is tar, because if the entire field was tamei, then Rashi explains that he would have made marker around the entire field. The fact that he didn't make a marker around the entire field is to show us that the tuma is only around the field, not only under that border, not in the entire field. And therefore, continues the Gemara, Shnayim, if there's a marker on two of the borders, Heim Tameim Kalsa the Kulu Torah. Shloisha, if the marker's around three of the borders, Kula Tameim, Shloisha, Heim Tameim the Kalsa the Kulu Torah. However, says Repub Asi, Arba, if all four sides of the field have markers, Heim Tahirim, then we assume that the area under the border is tar, v'kalsu the kula tamei. But we say that the entire interior area is tamei. Tamamar, because it says the Gemara, emachikin tzimah makam tumah, we don't distance the tzian, the marker from the makam tumah, shloi lahafsirat Yisrael. And if they wouldn't have marked all four borders, people would not be sure. The fact that the borders are marked, explained the Sfas Emes, is to show that this area where is the marker is no longer tamei, and the tumah is only after the area that's marked as tamei. We learned in the Mishnah the V'yotzen al Klayim that on Chol HaMoed Shlichei Bezdin could go out and check the status of Klayim in Eretz Yisrael, Ask the Gemara about Klaiv Dafka B'chol Shemoyed Nefkim. Ask the Gemara Nafkiran, is the time to go to make that examination at Yisrael a Chol Moed? For a minute, ask the Gemara, the Mishnah Masechta Shkolim, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Aleph teaches us. Bech B'Adar, or Rish Chodesh Adar, Mashmir Mal Shkolim. There's an announcement about the Shkolim that everybody should bring the Machzor Shekel, because as we've learned, when it comes Rish Chodesh Nissen, they're going to have to bring the new Kabbanah Tzibur from the new Shkolim. Val Klayim. And that's also when they make an announcement that if there's Klayim in the field, people should eliminate the Klayim, because by that time, it's noticeable if there's Klayim in the field. And since at that point, it's noticeable if there's Klayim in the field, everybody has the responsibility to check if there's Klayim and, of course, uproot it. When we get to the 15th day of Adar, in the cities that have walls from the times of Yishuv Benun is the day for Purim. That's the day they would go out and take the thorns off the roads. Any roads, the roads that got ruined during the winter would be fixed. We discussed this earlier, that they check the mikvahs if they have the proper shear. And other Rishonim explain that during the winter, because of the rain and different situations, the mikvahs might have gotten halachically disqualified. They might have gotten clogged with materials that would disqualify the pipes, etc. And therefore, the halacha is that that's the day that they go out to check these things. So Tosfos quotes to Yerushalmi, Masechet Shkolim, that we said that Mitzayinus HaKvaras B'chol Shemoyed. And Tosfos quotes to Yerushalmi, says that Chamisha Asaba Adar Mitzayin Al Kvaras. So what is the day that we go out to mark the Kvaras? Rish Chodesh Adar or 15 days in Adar? And the Gemara in Masechet Shkolim, the Yerushalmi, explains that what often happened was that on Rish Chodesh Adar, they would mark the graves, and then it would still be raining. The rainy season is not over in Eretz Yisrael. And since the rainy season is not yet over, they would again go out on Chol Hamoed to check what is the status. Other Rishonim explain that on Rish Chodesh Adar, they went out and they indeed marked the graves that they knew of. But maybe until Chol Hamoed, they became aware of other graves that weren't properly marked. So that's what they did on Chol Hamoed. Tosfos says that the Mishnah in Masechet Shkolim speaks about Shushan Purim, the Purim that the Megillah that's read of 15th Adar. Why doesn't it speak about the primary day of Purim? The primary day of Purim, as we learned in Masechet Megillah, is actually 14 days in Adar. So Tosfos explains, our Mishnah, the Mishnah there, is not primarily there to teach us Hilchos Kriyas Megillah. Hilchos Kriyas Megillah, we just finished learning Masechet Megillah. It's primarily there to teach us all these other halachas that we're learning about. And since it's there to teach us all these other halachas, but since all these other halachas that we are now learning are done on 15 days in Adar, so the Mishnah mentions also, of course, that on 15 days in Adar, we read the Megillah in cities that have a war from the time of Yishuv Benun. But the purpose of the Mishnah is not really to teach us Hilchos Megillah. Another terrace that I saw is, as we learned in Masechet Megillah, that in the places where the time of reading the Megillah is 14th of Adar, under certain circumstances, as we learned from the beginning of Masechet Megillah, we read the Megillah on the 11th, on the 12th, and the 13th. So unlike the 15th, which is a firm date, the 14th is not such a firm date. The Mishnah is focused on dates which are firm. Another pshat is, as we learned in Masechet Megillah, in Shushan, where it might not even have a wall from the time of Yishuv Benun, they read the Megillah on the 15th day of Adar. And as we learned, the reason why, because the Nes of Purim took place in Shushan. So since Shushan represents where the story really happened, and in Shushan, the Purim is on the 15th of Adar. That's why the Mishnah focused on that day. Continues the Mishnah. Vayisen kol tzarchei rabbim. We do everything that's needed for the rabbim, as we learned, dinei mamonos, dinei nefashos, saita, burning the parah aduma, taras metzaira, ritzias eved, and as the Ran explains, even though whenever the need for these things come up, they are performed. Besides that, whenever the need to be performed, they are performed. There was one day of the year that was designated that people should know that that's the day that all these activities are done. On Mitzayin Sakharis, as we just learned, they mark the Kvarim, the Yotzim Alaklayim, and they go out to the Klayim, to uproot the Klayim. So we see from here that the date for uprooting the Klayim is Rosh Chodesh Adar, and of Tesvav Adar, not Chol HaMoed. So the Gemara's question is, how do we reconcile these two halachas? I saw that some of the Rishonim explained, why did they indeed pick the 15th day of Adar to be the day that they do all these different activities? So I saw that the 15th day of Adar was a day which was somewhat of a yontif, for a whole new pshat. It was some day of the yontif, because even the people, most people, who celebrate Purim on Yud Al Adar, Shushan Purim is still somewhat of a yontif, and therefore they didn't go to their regular jobs, and there were many people who were available to do these different activities, and maybe not, and since you have so many workers, you could get the labor for cheaper. And that's why they chose that day for all of these activities. But again, the question is it Tezvav Adar, or is it Chol HaMoed? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Lozer, Rabbi Yosef Chanina, Chanam Kamba Baka Kamba Offal. There are certain produce that grow earlier. So earlier, on Tezvav Adar, you could already tell if there's Klayim. And there are other plants that take later to come out, and you can't tell until Chol HaMoed what if there's Klayim there. V'charamar, Kam Bezroim, Kam Birokas. By Tvua, by Adar, we could already tell if there's Klayim. Vegetables take longer, and we can't tell until Chol HaMoed. So some Rishonim say that these two terutzim don't really disagree. They're just giving different examples. I did see, however, that there's some achrayim that suggest that they're actually disagreeing. But continues the Gemara, Amar Asi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Loi Shanu, that this halacha that we only go out on Tezvav Adar or Chol HaMoed Pesach on Klayim, El Kishein Nitzan Nikr, when they did not begin to blossom. Aval Nitzan Nikr, once they begin to blossom, Yoytzim Elayim. Everybody could see that we have a Klayim problem here, and once you could see there's a Klayim problem, of course you have to go out. Ask the Gemara. So we understand why we go out at an earlier date and a later date. But ask the Gemara, my shna b'chol shemayda nafkinen. Why does it have to be on Chol HaMoed? So as the Rishonim explained, till now we could have said that Chol HaMoed wasn't really a date that they had to go out. It was just the Mishnah said you may go out of Chol HaMoed. But now after the Gemara has taught us that there were specific dates for specific types of produce. Some were specifically done on Tezvav Adar, and some were deliberately done on Chol HaMoed. So the question becomes very real. Is Chol HaMoed the date to pick to go do melacha? Answers the Gemara, Amar Rav Yaakov, Amar Rav Yochanan, Mishum Scha Pula de Mosle Gabon. People don't work on Chol HaMoed, and since people don't work on Chol HaMoed, they're available to do this. So from here, we see that you're allowed to get paid for a job that's allowed to be get done on Chol HaMoed. We're allowed to get paid for that job. But actually, Tosfos, the Ramaskel, the Mazli, has a discussion. And he quotes a Gemara that we're going to learn later on Daf Yud Gimel, where the Gemara says that even a job that is allowed to be done on Chol HaMoed, only people who are allowed to get paid for such a job are people who don't have any other income. But people who have income, even though they're doing a mitzvah, they're not allowed to, but they, Baruch Hashem, have enough income to live on, they're not allowed to get paid for working a Chol HaMoed. So the teretz that the Gemara is giving, that you could have cheap labor, depends on how to learn the Gemara in Daf Yud Gimel. Is it going to be limited only to people that don't have any other income, and only they could get paid for working a Chol HaMoed? Or is anybody who does work a Chol HaMoed that's permissible to be done, allowed to get paid a Chol HaMoed? The Taz says a very interesting approach. He says, even according to the person, even according to the opinion, that Baruch Hashem, someone who has income, even though he's doing a Dvar Mitzvah, he may not get paid for doing it on Chol HaMoed. When it's a Tzorech HaRabim, then it's allowed to be, then you're allowed to get paid. And here, it's certainly a Tzorech HaRabim, and therefore, the halacha is that we're allowed to do it. It's a Dvar Mitzvah, Tzorech HaRabim, that you're allowed, everybody's allowed to get paid. Amar Zivi, Tema Ramashashma, Shema Minon Dechi Yevina Luschar, that when we pay the people to take care of the klayim, Metrumas HaLishkin Yevina Lai, we pay him for Metrumas HaLishkin. So this is a very big problem, because we know that the money that's used for the Trumas HaLishka, as Tosfos in the Ramaskim of Trumas HaLishka points out, was used for the Kabbonis. And even though we're going to learn that Bezdin Masnan Aleim, that Bezdin could make a condition that we could use the money for different purposes, we can't use the money that was meant to be used for Kabbonis to pay people who are going to take care of Klayim. And therefore Tosfos says we're not talking about the money that's there from this year. This year's money should be used for Kabbonis. We're talking about, which we learned extensively in Masechta Shkalim, that sometimes the new year, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, the new year begins, and there's still leftover money from last year. And that money is used for this purpose. Says the Gemara, if we're going to say that we take payment for the shlichim from the people who own the fields, my nafkul aminayu, why do we care if we could get cheaper labor or more expensive labor? Call Kam the Bala Mitalu. Whatever will cost, we'll pay. The fact that we see that we're concerned about the payment, it must be that we're using Hegdish money. And of course, whenever we speak about Hegdish money, we have to be very concerned that none of it should go to waste. So ask the Gemara, At Kama, how much climb is growing that we should be concerned that we have to remove it? It's like we learned in the Mishnah Masechta Klayim, Perek Beis Mishnah Aleph, Kol Sheyesh Bo Roiva, Zerim Mimacher. If there's a Roiva of a calf of a different type of growth mixed up here, Yamat, it has to be eliminated. Ask the Gemara Vestanya, have we not learned in a Braisa, Sheskinu Shemafkirin's Kol Soda Kula, that they should declare the entire field hefker if there's klayim in it, not just eliminate the klayim. Answers Gemara Lakasha. Kaidim Takana, before Chazal made a rule that there should be mafkir entire field, then it was just enough to eliminate the klayim. Kalacha Takana, after Chazal made a takana that the field should become hefker if there's klayim, then we're mafkir entire field. And the Gemara elaborates with a brisa. The Tanya, Brishayna, at the beginning, Hayim Oikrim, the Shlich Bezdin, who saw Klayim, would uproot it, Umeshlichim Lefnei Behemdom, and they would throw it in front of the animals of the people who own those fields. Because the halacha is that you're allowed to eat and have a noah from Klayim produce, and therefore they could feed it to those animals. The Meiri said, there's an interesting approach, the different approach in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say that the Shlichim themselves were the ones that threw this in front of the animals. Other Rishonim, the Meiri suggests, they just would rip them out. But the owners would then take that those klayim produce and feed them to the animals. And the owners were doubly happy. Achashim Nachsum said the same. They weeded the field by removing the klayim, and the animals had food to eat. So they made up a new rule. She'ayikim eshlichim al-drachim. They didn't throw it in front of the animals. They threw it on the road. V'dayin ha'yismechim simcha g'dayla. Even though it wasn't as good as it was at the beginning, the owners of these fields were still quite satisfied. Shemenachsim said the same. They had free labor clearing their fields. So then for Eskinu, Shemefkirim Kalsad the Kula, they made a rule up that they should, that they should be mafka the entire field. And Mimela, once they were mafka the entire field, the halacha is that they have nothing to be happy about. They were actually quite upset. So now the question is, now the Shluchei Bezdin aren't doing that much work. They're not doing any actual physically labor. Still, it takes time to go from field to field, to examine the field, and that costs money, and that's why they prefer to do it a Chol HaMoed, where they could get, as we learned before, cheap labor to do so. Another pshat I saw Achronim suggest that even though now it isn't such a big job and you don't need that many workers and the cost should not be that much of a factor, but once when the rule was established, it was a consideration, it remained that way even afterwards. So we learned in the Mishnah at the beginning of the Masechta that in Chol HaMoed one could water a field which is a Beis HaShalchan, which is a field that we learned, we defined it as a field on the top of the mountain, that the water rolls down from the top of the mountain, and therefore there's not enough water on that field. And since there's not enough water on that field, it needs to be constantly watered. And if you're not going to water it, there's a situation of a hefsed meruba to that field. And therefore, Chazal allowed, under those circumstances, that you could water the field. But we learned in the Gemara that Rameir's opinion is that not only Beis HaShalchan may be watered in Chol HaMoed, but even a Beis HaBaal, which we explained at the beginning of Masechta, is a field that does get adequate rainwater, maybe watered on Yom Tov. Says the Mishnah of Elazar ben Yaakov Omer, Moshchen HaSamayim, you have a field with trees that has water under some of the trees. On Chol HaMoed, we can make ditches from one tree to the other tree to water all the trees, Me'ilan La'ilan. However, the halacha is, Ovad Shlo Yashkes Kosa Dekula. You have to be careful not to water the entire field. And Rashi explains, and we're going to learn the Gemara with Rashi's Pshat, even though as we're going to learn there are different opinions on how to learn the Mishnah, that the Mishnah here is talking about a Stei Beis HaBaal, which as we learned at the Mishnah we just mentioned, a Stei Beis HaBaal is a field that under normal circumstances, we try to avoid watering on Chol HaMoed, but this type of watering is permitted. There are other, that's the way Rashi learns, that's the way we're going to learn the Gemara. There are other Rishonim that disagree, and they say that we're talking here about a Beis HaShalchan. But even though on a Beis HaShalchan, we're allowed to water, it's not that we're allowed to do it without any conditions. And this is one of the conditions that required. Says the Mishnah, if you had different things that grow, that you didn't bother watering them before Yontif, so Rashi explains, therefore, since you didn't feel the need to water these things before Chol HaMoed, it's obvious that they're not that desperate for the water. And therefore, since they're not that desperate for the water, we can't water them at Chol HaMoed. Rambam has a different approach. The Rambam says, if it wasn't watered before Yontif, and you're now going to water it the first time on Chol HaMoed, it's going to require a tircha meruba to water. And as we've learned many times, Chazal were anxious to avoid a tircha meruba. Another pshat that I saw Rabbeinu Yerucham explains, and we're going to speak about this concept in Mitzvah Shem still, and that's the concept of mechavim malachti memoyed. We're now allowed to do something, to plan out to do something on Chol HaMoed. And here, where you didn't bother watering this field before Chol HaMoed, and now you water it for the first time on Chol HaMoed, it looks like you deliberately planned to do this malach on Chol HaMoed. And mechav malach to memoed is prohibited. The chamim atir mezeh bezeh, the chamim allow it all to water all types of fields. And as the Rishonim explained, as we said at the beginning of the Mishnah, that this represents the opinion of Rameyer, who Rameyer is, in general, much more lenient when it comes to watering fields on Chol HaMoed. Am Rabbi Yehuda, says Rabbi Yehuda, Im Haisa Sada Metunenes, if you had a field that was moist and then it got dried, mutter, then the halacha is you're allowed to water it on Chol HaMoed. Because since it was dry, it was moist, so this field that needs that moisture. And the fact that it's missing that moisture, the halacha will be that you're allowed to water it on Chol HaMoed. And Rashi explains that Rabbi Yehuda's statement goes back to what Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said at the beginning of the Mishnah. That Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov said, you're only allowed to bring the water from one tree to another tree. That says Rabbi Yehuda, that even though normally we have to limit and only allow the water from one tree to another tree, if it's a situation where the field was moist and now it got dried up, then, as Rashi explains, if we won't water the field, then the halacha is that it will be a hefsin meruba. The Rambam has a different approach. The Rambam says that what metunenes means is that the field was moist and it's still somewhat moist. And since it's still somewhat moist, we could be more lenient. And the reason he says, he gives two explanations. One explanation is that if it was moist, and now you put water on it, it's not that noticeable, and therefore we can be more lenient. And another pshat is that as we keep on repeating, we're always concerned for tircha meruba, that we don't want to have too much exertion on Chol HaMoed. But if you have a field that's moist, so watering it is not such a big job, and therefore it doesn't involve the tircha meruba, and therefore it may be done on Chol HaMoed. Says the Braisa, Tayyanami Hochri, Shamru, Osul Hashkas Bemoid, when we say we're not allowed to water an entire field of Chol HaMoed, Loy Amr al Bazarim Shloy Sosu of Neymoid, that they never had moisture, they were never watered before Yontif. Avul Zroim Shoshosu of Neymoid, if they were already watered before Yontif, Mutal Hashkas Bemoid, for the various reasons that we explained. Vim Hois Sodom Etonanis, again using Rashi Pshat, if it was a moist field that dried up, we also could be lenient. Says the Gemara, Ve'mashkin, says the Braisa, Ve'mashkin, says the Greer. A field that's always dry, moid. So a field that's always dry, obviously, could well survive without moisture. Because we see that the moisture is not critical for the success of the field. And therefore, since it's not necessary, anything that's not necessary, not absolutely necessary, may not be done on Chol HaMoed. Amar Ravina, based on this, says Ravina, that Shmamin v'chamim matir b'zeh b'zeh, the Chamim say that even if the field was never watered before Chol HaMoed, or if the field is a state grid, still matir b'zeh b'zeh, a lot of water, such fields on Chol HaMoed. Says Ravina, based on what the Chachamim just taught us, Shmamina Hai Tabitza, a field, a garden where vegetables grow, even though if it won't be watered, it will not be that terrible. Shori la Tabutza b'Chol HaMoed, we're still allowed of water in the Chol HaMoed. Why? Because stay grid, Ma Tama, what's the reason why the Chachamim were lenient and allowed us to water a dry field? We obviously see that this field is not that desperate for water, because we're allowed to water such a field on Chol HaMoed. The watering the field causes that the produce, which will ripen later, will get ready earlier. And even though that's not necessarily a loss, Chacham hold that that's still something that we're allowed to do on Chol HaMoed. Hachanami, by watering these types of fields, even though they aren't that desperate for the water, Hachanami, afle mashle charpa, we make it, that's a good enough reason to be able to do this type of watering in such a field. And Tosfos explains, how do we indeed understand this? We're learning in the Masechta, we're up to Davov, how Chazal was so concerned about not doing Melach and Chol HaMoed. And here, Chazal, just that the fruit, the produce, should get ripened earlier, they allow us to water on Chol HaMoed. So Tosfos explains that these types of fields, don't really need a lot of watering. And since they don't need a lot of watering, the watering that you're going to do on Chol HaMoed is not that significant. And therefore, since it's not that significant, Chazal said, when it's significant watering, we have to start judging if it may or may not be done on Chol HaMoed. But if it's not significant watering, we could be lenient. Tana Rabbanan, Mabitzin Stei Lovin, a field of Stei Lovin may be Shvius. Such a field may be watered on Shvius. A Stei Lovin is a field where grain grows. Avaloi B'moed and not a Chol HaMoed. Ask the Gemara, Tanya, didn't we learn in a Braisa, Mabitza Beim Amoid Beim Shvius, that it may be done both in Chol HaMoed and in Shemitah? Answer the Gemara, I'm a Rav Eloi Kasha. Ha Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov just taught us in our Mishnah, Ubovad, Shlo Yashkus Kol HaSod Kula. We have to avoid watering the entire field. And therefore, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov will hold that in Chol HaMoed we can't do this. For Ha Rabbanon, the Rabbanon at our Mishnah that we learned at the end of the Mishnah, Chatamim Matirim Bezeh Bezeh are more lenient. Tan Yidach, Mabitzin Stei Lovin Erev Shvius, we're allowed to water this type of a tefuah field before Shemitah, Kedei Shietzi Rokas B'Shvius, that it should cause the vegetables to come out in the Shemitah year. V'loyoid, Shematzitzin Stei Lovin B'Shvius, Kedei Shietzi Rokas B'Matzah Shvius. In other words, anything that grows in the Shemitah year itself, as a mitzvah Shem we're going to learn, is considered svichim. And we're not allowed to eat svichim. But here, if we watered it before Shemitah, that's fine. Or if we watered it during the Shemitah year, but it's only going to grow after Shemitah year, that's allowed to be eaten. So the question that I saw the Paiskim discuss, here we're learning under what circumstances we're allowed to water a field during the Shemitah year. And the question is, particularly, Bizman Hazeh, where much activity is really not done with humans. People aren't really walking around and watering the fields. It's all done by computer, that you set the computer and there's watering systems in the fields. What is the halacha on the Shemitah year? So the question is particularly interesting because we know on Shabbos, let's say somebody has a system where his garden gets watered. The halacha is explicitly, the Gemara says Masechta Shabbos, that you're allowed to put on the watering from before Shabbos, and it continues on Shabbos, because you're not doing any malacha. So here too, if your computer automatically sets that the field should get watered in the Shemitah year, why is it different than Shabbos? So Rav Ozner, in the Shas HaTshuvas, Shevet Alevi, Chelik Yud Simon Reish discusses the Shabbos, the Shiloh. And he says, when it comes to Shabbos, the Torah says, Sotcha Loisasaka Malacha. On Shabbos, we're not allowed to do any Malacha. If I put on the water from before Shabbos, I didn't do any Malacha on Shabbos. And that's why it's Mutter. Similarly, it says regarding the Shemitah year, as we learned earlier in our Masechta, Sot Chloi Sizra, Karma Chloi Sizmer. We're not allowed to do any malacha. And here, I didn't do any malacha. But there's another consideration, which we've mentioned before. And that is that when the Shemitah year comes, the Torah HaKadosh says, V'shav Sa'aretz, you have to let the land rest. And this is a violation of V'shav Sa'aretz. So even though there isn't necessarily a consideration of Sotchalai Sizra, there is this consideration of Shav Sa'aretz, and it shouldn't be done in the Shemitah year. Says the Mishnah, Tzodna Se'ishas, there's a type of a insect that we're going to speak about, that will allow to capture Vesachborim and mice, Mestei Elovin, from a tree with field where trees grow, Mestei Elovin, as we just said, a field where tfu grows, Kedarkai, we're allowed to catch them in the normal fashion on Chol HaMoed. Because they cause serious damage to the field, and therefore, since it's a question of Hefsa Meruba, we're allowed to do it in Chol HaMoed. V'Shvius, and we're allowed to do that in the Shemitah year as well. V'chama Mesteya Eilin Kedarkoi, from in a state land we could capture them in the normal fashion, Mesteya Lovin Shloi Kedarkoi, because in the state halavim, they don't cause such significant damage. So since they don't cause such significant damage, we don't have a hefsa merubah. And when we don't have a hefsa merubah, we can't be that lenient. Umakrines apirtza. If there's a fence around the field, the halach is, we're allowed to fix it on the chalamayit. Ubishvius, in the Shemitah, we could even be more lenient. In the Shemitah year, we're allowed to burn a kedarkai because we're not doing this to protect the field. We're not working the field. And since we're not working the field, it's not usur. Ask the Gemara, my ishus. What is ishus? Amar Rav Yehuda, beria she'en layanayim. It's a type of an insect that doesn't have any eyes. Amar Rav Shmuel, Amar Rabbi Bar Shmuel, v'tamer Rav Yehuda Bar Shamya, my craw, where do we see that this is a type of an insect that has no eyes? Because the pasuk says in Tehillim, we see that the Ashes is something which is Balchamishemish, that never sees day, never sees the sun. It doesn't have, it's blind. Tana Rabbanan says the Gemara, the Brisa teaches us, son and Saishis as Achmarin, Mistay Elovin, or Mistay Elan Kedarkoi, or Machriven Charin Amolim. If there are holes where the ants hide out, we'll either destroy them chalamoid. Says the Brisa, Ketzed Machriven, exactly how is that accomplished? Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, maybe offer Mechazeh, Nostotachazeh, we take earth from one hole and we put it into the other hole, and Chaykim Zezeh. Since the worms in one hole are not familiar, we'll see why in a moment, with what's going on in the other hole, and when you bring the earth from one hole, coming along with the whole earth that you can transport are these worms, are these insects, so they kill the insects that are in the other hole. But says the Gemara, or qualifies the Gemara, how may this be done? Amram Yehimeh Bashalmiya, the Mishmei Dabaya, Vu Dekroi Batrei Arba D'Arma, when these two holes are two different sides of the river. When the two sides of the river, that's why the earth from the two sides of the river is very dissimilar, and therefore we have this type of situation. However, even if they're in the two sides of the river, Vu Deleka Gishra, there is no bridge that connects the two sides of the river. Vu Deleka Gamla, and even if there is no board that connects the two sides of the river. Vudalaka mitzvah, there is no rope that connects the two sides of the river. Because when you have anything connecting the two sides of the river, then you have then even though they're distant from each other, the connection makes that it shouldn't be a problem. That kama at parsa. And here too, there's the two pshatim. One pshat is that up to a parsa, but once this pshat is lakula, that up to a parsa, then if there's something connecting them, we have to be concerned. But if there's nothing connecting them, then if there's nothing connecting them, so there's right away, if the two sides of the river, that one type of earth will destroy the other type of earth. If there's something connecting them, and there's less than a parsa distance between the two of them, we have a problem. But if there's a parsa distance, even though there's something connecting them, the halacha is that there's no problem anymore because they're so far from each other. So that's a pshat l'kula. But other Rishonim learned the pshat l'chumra. And they say as follows, that if there's less than a parsa between these two holes, even though there's nothing connecting, they're in two sides of the river, and there's nothing connecting them, the fact that they're less than a parsa distance from each other, we always have to be concerned. When we have a parsa distance, so now it depends. If we have a parsa distance and nothing connecting them, then then one type of earth will crush the other type of earth. But if there's something connecting them, even though they're a parsa away from each other, then they won't adversely affect the other.